Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Shazan Shigani. Please go ahead, sir.
Meeting URL is available on the WebSphere Technical Exchange site. Today's webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. Once you're in the meeting, you'll see the presentation. We recommend that you view the presentation in full screen mode. To do this, go to the view in the toolbar at the top of your screen and select Make Share Area at your full screen. If you're unable to access the e-meeting at this time, or if you'd like to download a copy of the presentation, please go to the WebSphere Technical Exchange site and click on today's presentation title. The document that displays will contain the PDF file. You may also access the presentation by going to any IBM.com site and typing the tech doc number 7010133 in the search box found at the very top of the page. Once again, the number is 7010133. This call is being recorded, so you can play it at your convenience. Early next week, the MP3 file along with the presentation will be available on the previous webcast tab of the WebSphere Technical Exchange site. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask you to respond to a few quick polling questions. At the end of today's session, the lines will open for a question and answer period. Today's presenter is Paul Van Norman. Paul received a BSc in Computer Science in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada in 1997. Currently working as team lead of the WebSphere L2 WSSDK support team. Certified in WebSphere Administrator for version 5.0 and version 6.0. Paul started working for IBM in May of 2000 and has worked in WebSphere L2 support since this date. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Paul.
Thank you, Shazan. Thank you for everybody for joining us today. Today we're going over the understanding class loaders for WebSphere 5.1, 6.0, and 6.1. Page 2, please. The agenda is to begin with a class loader overview. Then we'll discuss the different modes and policies for the class loaders and settings that we have in WebSphere. Shared libraries, class loading, and then some common exceptions and the causes of those exceptions. Page 3, please. So class loaders, theory of operations. The class loader performs, the Java class loader performs three major functions, and that is to load your Java classes, any of the resource files for your Java classes, and then also some native libraries, .so and .dll. And class loaders are units of isolation, meaning that a class that's loaded by class loader 1 is not the same as a class, even if the same class loaded by class loader 2. If you try and cast a class loaded by class loader 1 into class loader 2, you will get a class cast exception. Code reloading or class reloading is actually can only be done at the class loader level. So you cannot reload an individual class. You actually have to lose all the references and objects from a particular class loader and then open a new class loader and do a new reload. Page 4, please. The JVM's class loader delegation mode is always parent first. The highest level is the bootstrap, and the bootstrap is actually loaded by the native code by the operating system. Then you have the Java extensions class loader, which loads the classes from the Java home libext directory, and then you have the system class loader. And that's the sun class loader that loads the app, and that's the app class loader. And that's the class loader that loads all the classes from the class path system property. Page 5, please. So the JVM class loaders, as I mentioned earlier, the actual Java home lib directory, this is loaded by the native code. And actually, if you do a get class loader to discover what class loader has loaded them, you'll actually return a null because it is all the native code. And these are typically to load all the Java .star package classes. the extensions class loader is implemented by Sun's EXT class loader, and that loads the Java gens, the Java classes, in the libEXT directory. You can also add the system property, the java.ext.dirs directory. And an example of some of the packages that are loaded in the extensions would be some security packages. And the app class loader, which is those that are defined in the class path, this is what is used by WebSphere. And there's a listing of all the default classes and jars that are in WebSphere's class path. So we really don't recommend anybody putting anything else in there. So there's usually about 10 or so items in the listing. And these can be seen in when you're starting up the system in the systemout.log file. Page 6, please. The delegation for WebSphere 5.1 and 6.0 it defaults to parent first, since that matches what you see in the JVM. And so the classes for your, let's say, a web application would not look for itself first. It would actually go up the chain a bit. And so this is something that can be overridden. But again, the default mode is parent first. Page 7.
Before going to the next chart, if you're not joining the e-meeting, you can still access the presentation by going to ibm.com and typing 701-10133. Again, that's 701-0133. In the search box at the very top of the page, a technical document with a PDF will display. You should also note there are a couple graphics in this presentation that may look blurry to you in the e-meeting, but they show up perfectly on the PDF. If you'd like to use those as a reference, you can still use the PDF located online. Thank you. I'll now return the presentation over to Paul.
Thank you, Shazam. Okay, so the WebSphere class loader overview. Three major classes of class loaders are used by WebSphere. And the first one we were discussing, which was a system class loader, which is the JVM itself. Then you've got the WebSphere runtime class loaders, which is used to load the WebSphere runtime and all its supporting libraries. And the third class is the application class loaders, which are used to load your web applications and EJB modules and all the utility jars. Page 8, please. And this diagram is for version 6.1, and really the only difference between this and the previous versions is that you have the OSGI framework off to the side there, and WebSphere actually has individual class loaders for all the OSGI plugin components. But other than that, the class loader policy from a application or developer perspective is the same. The delegation default is parent first. Page 9, please. So the version 6.1 runtime class loader overview. WebSphere extensions class loaders, where, again, the class loader loads itself. And as mentioned earlier, WebSphere is packaged, is now in 6.1, a set of OSGI bundles. And so each one of those would have its own class loader. So there, again, this has to do with modularity of the components of WebSphere. And the OSGI class loaders are connected to the extensions class loader. I guess that's it for this one. Page 10, please. So the WebSphere runtime class loader, the first one to load WebSphere itself is from the extensions class loader, and this is from the bootstrap. And this is what actually starts to load all the IBM runtime classes. And these can be found in the WASD DIRs property setting. And you can turn on, sometimes you want to know where classes are being loaded from or if there's some sort of contention or problem. or you're getting a class not found, that type of thing, you can turn on some debugging. The ws.ext.debug equals true property that will print out the classes as they're being loaded in the native standard out.log, and this will give you a good clue as to not only that the classes are being loaded, it'll actually show you that the jar that they're being loaded from. So it'll show you the full path. When you enable class loader tracing through the administrative console, there's actually a checkbox on there for verbose traces, and that's essentially what it's doing. So it's enabling this. And the reason for this is it also captures the class loader traces before WebSphere even started. So you're not using the WebSphere application server, the traces at this point. This is before then. Okay, next page, 10, please. In WebSphere 6.1, there's the internal classes. You can actually restrict the usage. Normally, we don't recommend using the WebSphere packages, com.ibm.ws.star. Those are undocumented classes, and they can change without any public notification. The classes packages that we do document are com.ibm.websphere.star packages. And those are the ones that we document, and when changes are being made to them, they're deprecated, and we make note of that. So into the administrative console, we actually allow you to, the admin, to do a checkbox to either allow or restrict the use of the WS packages. Page 12, please. For the application class loader, there are two possible delegation modes, and we discussed it a little bit earlier, where the default is parent first. Now, what that means is the parent class loader causes the first class loader requests the parent class loader to load the class before it even attempts to do it itself. And you'll see that there's a chain of class loaders. So you would go from the web app to the application to the server and all the way up the chain. The other delegation mode is parent last. And this one will cause the class loader to attempt to find the classes in its own class path before delegating upwards. So if you do have something, a specific class that's available to you, let's say a Xerxes class that you want to use in your application that's different than WebSphere, you'd want to set it parent last in order to find itself first using its own, the web module class loader. Page 13, please. Another key setting regarding the web modules is in your application, you can define the web module to be loaded as module or application. If you set it for module, that means that each web application in your ear would have its own unique class loader. The application means that there's a single application class loader, and that all the jars in each of your web modules would all be able to see each other. So you have a single class loader visibility. Page 14, please. The application class loader policy is you are able to set for your application is to have a single class loader. Again, that single class loader would be shared between all of your applications, and then there's multiple. So each application, to segregate it and more control of the classes that you want to load, you can have multiple. And that would allow you to have, again, in your application, you can actually have different versions of the same class being loaded with their own class loaders. Page 15, please. So the enterprise application ear usually contains your web modules, EJB modules, your application modules, utility jars, and other dependency type of files. The application class loaders load the EJBs and dependency jars, resource adapters, and anything that's defined in a shared library. And this is implemented by the com.ibm.ws class loader, compound class loader, and that class loader is found in the two jars noted below, the classloader.jar and the com IBM.ws runtime 610 jar. And one of the reasons it's kind of important to understand the class loaders is, especially on problem determination, if you're looking at the traces, trying to figure out why something's not working properly, you can get an idea of what class loader is loading it so you know where it's being found, or at least at where it's being searched from. So that's why we have different class loaders and with a name specified, so you get a good idea of you know, what class loader is loading and where it's looking. So depending on the class loader, the pulse that you have to find for your application, there the application class loaders can be shared by multiple applications in a single setting, which I mentioned earlier, or each have their own unique application by class loader by setting it to mod multiple. And the application class loader controls the isolation, as I mentioned earlier, whether you want your application to load its own version of the file so you're okay to share the classes amongst all your applications. And these can be set through the administrative console, as noted, on servers, application servers, and in server one. Page 16, please. And this is hard to see on our presentation, but this is just shows you in the administrative console the two different settings on and where to make them. We can go to the next page, please, 17. This diagram is an example of an ear file that has two applications and two web apps in them. The application class loader policy is multiple. That means that there's an application on the left-hand side, application on the right-hand side, and each of those has their own unique class loader. The one on the left, which is app 1, is set to module. What that means is that your web module has its own class loader. So here we see, from the bottom, we see that the WAR class loader on the left-hand side, it can only see its own, or it looks in its own class path for its jars. And then the application above it, the app 1 EJB.jar, can see, loads its class loader, sorry, it loads its own classes with its own class loader and then delegates up to the WebSphere class loader. And the one thing to note here is that the application class loader for app 1 cannot see, because it does not delegate down, it only delegates up, so the application class loader would not be able to see any classes that exist in your WAR file. Okay? And on the right-hand side, we have the app 2, EJB.jar, and web app. And here we've got a single application class loader. And this would allow an application to see any of the jars and classes that are in the web module. So by simply changing the class loader policy from module to application, your application can now access the classes that are in the WAR file. Page 18, please. This is another example of an ear file where the delegation mode has been set to single. So you have a single application class loader as opposed to multiple. Now, in this example, we can see on the left-hand side, the second square down, is that all of the application code can be seen by everybody. So classes loaded by app 1 can be actually seen and accessed by the application in EJB2, as well as the web app classes. And the reason for this is because the web app on web app 2 is set to application. If you had it set to module, like you do for app 1, then you wouldn't be able to see it because that would have its very own class loader. And again, it does not delegate down. It only would delegate up. So anything above cannot see below. Page 19, please. Again, this is just a screenshot of showing how through the administrative console to set the parent last, parent first, and policy settings. Page 20, please. And another screenshot of the web module settings, parent first and parent last, and whether it's set to application or module. Page 21, please. Another feature that we have in WebSphere to allow users to define their own classes is to define them in a shared library. And this allows you to package utility jars outside of the EAR file. For instance, if you have common files that you want, common classes that you want to share between multiple applications and even multiple servers, you can define a shared library and then associated that shared library with your application. And as a result, your application on startup would have the shared library listing in its class path, and they would be able to have access to the classes. And a nice thing about using shared libraries is also if you have a specific version of a class that you want to upgrade, you don't have to go to each and every application that is using it. You can just go to their shared library where they all point to, upgrade that one, and then all of your applications on restart would have access to it. Page 22, please. This is an example of how to define your shared library. You would create the shared library to begin with. Then you would define a class loader. And then after you'd be able to define your class loader. You can define multiple. You have one shared library, but you can point to it by any of your class loaders. So you can define multiple class loaders to point to one or more shared libraries. And then after that, associate the class loader with your server or application. Page 23, please. On default, WebSphere has class loading, the application class loader reloading to, I believe it's enabled by default. And what that does is it goes out and it'll check your application or your web app to see if there's any classes that have been modified. And if it discovers that something's been modified, it'll end up going around and reloading your application. This is fine for a test environment when you're constantly making changes and want to test it. But you wouldn't want to do that into production for a couple of reasons. One is you don't want to be changing anything in production randomly. And the other one is there's a bit of overhead to that. Page 24, please. So some application packaging suggestions. Normally, of course, you're going to be packaging your web apps and your EJBs into the EJB jars. But for supporting classes and utility jars, you may not want to package it with your application. So, for instance, if you have a class that is used by one application, one WAR file, then you just simply want to package that utility jar within your application in the webinf-lib directory. If you have classes that you want to share by your EJB, by multiple modules, web modules in your EJB, you can replace them in your at the root of the EAR, and then update the manifest in each of your application modules or web modules to point to the class path to point to the utility jars. So So in what happens is all the EJB and utility jars referenced in the manifest class path will actually be loaded by a single class application class loader. So everybody would have clear view of that, of the classes. If the application class loader policy is application, then the web modules would be also loaded by the application class loader. And again, that would mean that everything in your ear would have access to all of the other classes and jars in the package with the ear. Page 25, please. The context class loader is set on a thread by the container. This is useful when you want to load your own classes. You can actually get a hold of the current context class loader, and it depends on the class loader that's being used at the time as to whether it's a web module class loader or an application class loader. And you can get the context class loader by calling the thread, current thread, get context class loader method. 26, please. So some common issues with native code-shared libraries. Sometimes it's desirable to package code that depends on a native library in an application. But the JVM will only allow the native library to be loaded once, because the JVM really only has a single address. And the JVM is the bottom line, what loads that library. So as a result, any class that does call the system load library and has a native method call cannot be loaded by more than one class loader, because again it delegates up to the JVM's class loader. So what you want to do in that case is to load the classes where you would have a single class loader in the JVM, where the application class loaders can be reloaded. You wouldn't want to do that unless you explicitly unloaded all the libraries, all the classes from that class loader. So the recommendation would be to break out the code that does the loading of that native code and put it in its own class and have it. And then have the class loader from the WebSphere's application class loader load the jar itself rather than the individual applications. Page 27, please. So this is an example of some common issues of overriding the Apache framework. There's a need, a common need for applications that want to provide their own versions of the Xerxes parser with their application. But if you replace the Xerxes, you must also replace the Xalin if your application uses it at all. Otherwise, you'll get a linkage error, and the reason for that is there's a dependency on them. They need to be at the same level. When you package your own Xerxes file, you must also use the parent last delegation mode. Again, this will allow your application to look locally, either in its own packaging or in the shared library, which you've defined to your application, before going up and searching the JVM's version of the Xerxes class. And so the best way to accomplish this would be to define a shared library server-wide and, again, set to parent last. Page 27, please. Oh, 28. Thank you. So common issues is a no-class def found error. And this is thrown when the JVM or the class loader instance tries to load the definition of a class. And this is an implicit class loading. And no definition for the class is found. This is seen when you're trying to load an invalid or non-existent class, or there's something wrong with the class path problem or a manifest problem. And again, these are implicit class loading which causes the no class to have found error. So the solution for that is to have the classes placed on the servers on the application's class path. There's also another time when this is seen, and it's when the classes are actually present, but they're still not found. So, as shown earlier, the classes loading occurs via the parent delegation mode. The class loading never is delegated to the client, to the child. So, if you have, for instance, a class loader, say, at the application level, and it needs access to the file, but a class, but the class is actually in the web app, and the web app has its own class loader, it will not delegate down, and therefore it will not see it. So you will actually, even though it's packed, that class is packaged in your ear and WAR file, you will still get the no class def found because the application cannot see the module's class loader classes. So you make sure that you need to package all the classes and dependency classes really at the same level of the class loader hierarchy. That's to be sure that they can be seen. Page 29, please. The class not found exception. This is really the same type of problem that you see as with the no class def found above or previously, except this is actually an explicit call for the class, and some example classes that you would use to call on a class or to load a class are the forName method, find system class method, or load class. And again, this exception is thrown when the class code cannot be loaded. And this can be caused by the class is just simply not visible on the logical class path of the class loader. And so it'll search everything, again, even if it's in the same jar file, but if it's not in its logical class path, it will not find it. Another example of when this can happen is when an application incorrectly uses the class loader API. This would be an example of when you are using some code in your application and you want to load a class, but it's not the current class loader that you have, the current class loader context you have, does not have that class in its class path. So again, this is a programmatic thing that you may have gotten the wrong class loader context. Page 30, please. Class not found exception. To correct this problem, you want to make sure the application-specific classes are visible to the application class loader. Again, these solutions are really the same as the no class def found error, again, because it's simply that the classes are not visible. So what you want to do is you want to be able to search for the class. In this case, we'll say class B. So if you're getting an exception that you cannot find class B, you want to find out, you want to search for it to see whether it's in its the proper location. If the class is loaded and it's there, but you're still getting a class not found, you want to check for the class loader that loaded class A. So if A is calling B, you want to make sure that the class loader A was loaded by the same class loader that has B in its class path. If there are different class loaders, you're going to get a class not found exception. And again, to resolve this issue is to make sure that class B is visible to the JVM or the web extension's class loader. That would be at a higher level, and it would delegate up. Page 31, please. Another common exception is a class cast exception, and many programmers already know this. This is thrown when you're trying to cast one object into a subclass where it's not the casting object is not a member of. So in this example, we've got an integer x, and in the next line of code, it is you're trying to cast an integer into a string. So this would cause the class cast exception. Another type the source object is not an instance of the target class, and that's kind of similar to the one above where it's just simply just not a member. It's not the same type. The next time when you would see the class cast exception is when the class loader that loaded the source class is a different class loader that loaded the second one. And we've actually talked about that a couple of times. So they have to, even if they're exact same objects, same everything, if the class loader is different, you're going to get a class cast exception. And another one that's not seen that often is when an application fails to perform or improperly performs a narrow operation. Excuse me. An example of this is when you're doing a remote EJB lookup. You get a handle on that EJB. What you need to do in your code is you have to call the narrow method, and that would convert it into an object that can be cast. Otherwise, you will end up without. If you don't call the narrowing method, you will get a class cast exception. Page 32, please. The Java lang linkage error violates loader constraint. Excuse me. This error occurs when there's two different views of the same class and they're being defined by the initiating class loader. Basically, what that says is a common class loader has access or can view the same classes from two different locations. So an example of this would be if you have a class that needs to call, we'll say, Xerxes, and that same class needs to later on call Xalen. If at a later point, Xalen itself needs to call Xerxes. This is actually a little bit complicated, but what the deal is if you package, we'll say, the Xerxes only in your WAR file, that means your application can see it. Now, your application also needs the Xalen jar. It's not packaged with your web app. It ends up going into web, delegating all the way up to the JVM. The JVM loads its version of Xalen, so now you have the two versions. And with one of the method calls that's needed, the Xalen that's loaded by the JVM needs to have access to Xerxes. Well, it's loaded at a higher level in your web app. You can't see the one that your application's already loaded, so it'll actually attempt to load it itself. And this is where you would see the linkage error, because it's already been loaded, and it's delegated all the way up, and you would get the that type of error, the linkage error. 33, please. There's a utility in the version 6.1 WebSphere, and the class loader viewer. And you can actually enable this. It's as a service, and you can use it to kind of see what classes or where your applications are being loaded from. And you can enable this again through the administrative console, and that's through the servers, application servers, class loader, and view service. And then when you want to, you'd have to restart your application or reload your application. And to view the data, you can go to the administrative console, troubleshooting, class loader viewer, and that'll show you the classes that were loaded and where it looked. You can actually export that into an XML file. And if you needed assistance from WebSphere support, you could actually send in that, and that would give us a clue. That type of data also kind of shows up if you do class loader traces, but the viewer, of course, puts it in a much prettier format. Page 34, please. These are just some links to some additional Webster product resources that you may find useful. Page 35. So what we did is we, as a summary, we went over the class loader overview. We have the JVM's class loaders itself, and then the WebSphere extended the JVM's class loaders for some additional functionality. The class loader delegation mode and policy settings. That's where you set the parent first, parent last for the delegation modes and the policies, whether you want applications or single. We also talked about shared libraries and why you'd want to use them if you're sharing utility jars and or native libraries amongst multiple applications. Shared library is a good place to set it up. We talked about class reloading if you want to do some development and you wanted to scan your applications to see whether there's been any changes. It'll automatically reload them for you. And we also discussed about common exceptions and some the causes for those exceptions and some solutions. And that's all I have at this time. Page 36. So we're open for some questions and answers.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. And we'll take a question from Andy Caprio with Prudential.
Hi, how are you? Paul, great presentation. Really appreciate this. Really hit the mark. I have an obvious question, I think, I just wanted to ask it just for my own edification. For a class loader, we run applications in single JVMs. In other words, we don't put more than one application inside a JVM. Does a class loader, by any chance, go across memory spaces, or is that just restricted to the JVM?
Yeah, it would be. I'm not really sure I understand the question, but yeah, in the JVM would have its own class loader. Are you talking about if you needed to have access to another application running on in a different JVM?
Yeah, there are some concepts of having cross-memory sharing of different things, but when we talk about a class loader, it's really restricted to the JVM, right? The process that's...
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. I had a follow-up question, but I wanted to, you know, if I could ask it now. The utility that you're talking about enabling in the console... you say it's enabled as a service, but I have to actually launch the console to view that. Is there any way to do that external? We don't run with console. We do everything through WSAdmin commands. So running the console is a little bit prohibitive. Do you have any external ways to see the class load? It sounds like we can do the debug, but it sounded also like the graphical one was pretty nice.
Right, but and I think that's kind of the whole idea with it through the console is graphical.
Right.
I don't know, to be honest, whether you could use a WS command to have it convert that data into an XML file and export it.
Yeah, I guess one of the things, the last question you asked on the call was what are the things and features we would like to see. We used to really rely on the Tivoli Performance Viewer that was able to attach to a running process without the console. IBM switched gears again and went to, you know, having to launch the console to see the Performance Viewer. And it sounds like you're now adding additional functionality where the console has to be available to see some of these things. So there used to be standalone, you know, Java applets or Java applications that would allow us to kind of hook into an existing JVM and see that data.
Right. I think that it's actually kind of boring. You wouldn't want to do it all the time anyway. It's only for a specific application. So you, again, if you... I'm not so confident that there'd be anything in using the WS command that would allow you to do that. I think it is a plug-in to the administrative console.
Okay. So
as a side thing, you could just enable tracing for that one unique time when you'd want to actually view it, because it's really not performance. It's nothing. It's something you wouldn't want to be looking at all the time.
Got it.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks.
And there are no further questions at this time. However, I would like to give everyone one final opportunity. That is *1 on your touchtone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is *1 on your touchtone telephone. And we have a question from Melissa Hubbard from Highmark.
Hi, I was just looking over the internal classes that you had on slot 11, and I was wondering, do you recommend setting that to restricted, or are there classes that are in the internal com.ibm.ws packages that are not available in the com.ibm WebSphere classes?
Yeah, I actually don't know what jars they would be in, but it's all in the packaging. So, for instance, you're talking about the com.ibm.ws and the com.w.websphere. They may be a mixture of packaging that's in that class path that you're looking at.
Okay.
I don't know if that answers your question or not, but the listing there is the class path that WebSphere loads. That's just the location to the jar files. But what we were talking about was restricting to what classes it uses out of those. So even if you have a mixture of the WS and the WebSphere classes in amongst those jar files, that setting you have to the administrative console would restrict it. You could restrict it to not allow you to load the for your application the com.ibm.ws classes.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
And there are no further questions. I'd like to turn the conference back over to you, Mr. Shigani, for any additional or closing remarks.
Perfect. At this time, we would like to actually conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Paul, for presenting today.
This concludes today's presentation. Thank you for your participation and have a wonderful day.